Dublin's Q102.
Debbie Allen in for Scott Williams and Colman Nocter, child and adolescent psychotherapist and author of Cop On. What is it your child needs to thrive and survive in today's world? How are you?
Good thanks, Debbie.
Good
how are you?
Good to see you. I'm great. Great, not a bother. I'm going to start with something probably so serious, but it's a lot. I have a little boy lives next door to me. His name is O'Shane, and he's 5 3/4, as he always tells me. And when Nice happened, I remember talking to his parents, because he'd heard it on the radio. They had to turn off the radio because he was asking questions. And so on Sunday, Ariana Grande and a host of other stars performed in the tribute concert to the awful incident at Manchester. And of course, the night before with the awful terrorist attacks in London. So a lot has been talked about all this weekend. How do you actually, if your child asks, what's happening, ma'am? What's happening, dad? How do you deal with it?
It's really difficult because, I mean, you don't want to shrink the innocence of childhood. I mean, that's one of the things that children shouldn't have to be concerned with, terrorism and threat. And one of the core elements of children's lives is that they feel safe. It's only after they can feel safe that they can build resilience, build experiences and all those sorts of things. That's kind of core to the problem. And I remember when Paris happened, I was asked to do this and I was really reserved to kind of talk about how do you explain these things to children because I was conflicted about it.
Yeah.
But it was really well pointed out to me that this stuff is everywhere, you know, and it's in our mass media, and it's not that you can avoid it, but it's also the playground becomes a place of fantasy. And so one child hears a bit more than another child and starts to inflame stories. And so then the child begins, you know, is ISIS something that lives down the road from us? Are we in real threat? And you don't know what they're taking from it. So I've kind of resigned the fact that you have to explain it to some degree with them. But I'm wary of kind of saying this is what you say to a five-year-old, this is what you say to... Because different children are different.
There's
some children who will watch news stories, and I've seen it throughout my career, who'll become increasingly upset, sleepless nights, trauma, and will really personalise that experience. And that child, less is more, in terms of trying to... And you're not trying to hide the truth, but you're just trying to protect their vulnerabilities around what they would take from that. And then there's an older child who might be disinterested in it and is kind of distancing themselves from that as a means of surviving and getting through it, like we all do. But as adults, we have the capacity to think about these things really meaningfully, get really upset by it, but switch off and go on to something else. That's a skill that you only develop in adulthood. In childhood, it's kind of always on. And you know how a child gets obsessed about... Children get obsessed about toys or they get obsessed about TV shows. They get obsessed about upsetting things too. And so I think it depends on really knowing your child as well as you can and giving them the information that they need to know not to be kind of taken by the myths or the playground fantasies and have some grounding in it, but not something that will terrify them. And, you know, it's really difficult because my own son is 6 and he was asking me about bad people. Are there bad people in Ireland? Are there bad people in England? And kind of he was kind of picking up this kind of bad people are over there, not here. And for some reason, I didn't want to really challenge that and say, you know, actually, they're here too. You know.
So what do you say?
Well, I try and avoid getting into the bad people, good people debate and saying people doing bad things. It helps to not polarise things and not get into those. But for him...
But there will be some adults out there that will be, you know, will be very angry at what's happened and put that anger on like they're really bad people and they do this and they do that, whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean,
There's also people as well that like... And I've heard it over the weekend or whatever, like parents, for example, who are chatting amongst themselves and they're going, oh, well, we better be careful when we go to Turkey on holiday, or we better be careful when we go to Tormelinas. And I mean, for a child who's perhaps going on holiday, who might be a little bit concerned about that anyway, because they're going to be out of their comfort zone, how do you rest? How do you make them feel more
assured? Well, they're adult worries. You know, in terms of your child doesn't really have to know the dangers involved in your travel itinerary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In that regard. And so you shouldn't have those conversations
so
in front of children.
Yeah.
There's enough exposure there for children to be upset by it, to be affected. This was especially difficult because children died. And it makes it just all that more personable for younger children, even the ages of 11, 12, who might have been at the Ariana Grande concert a couple of weeks only over the road.
Yeah.
And it makes something really painful, something really close and something really real. And children can survive trauma, you know, in terms of, there's populations not too far up the road who've survived decades of it and living in it. Not without scarring, obviously, but we have to equip them with the balance that there's good. And I would always say to my son, there's far more good people than there are bad people. Yeah. And you know, trying to get him to see the imagery. I remember in Paris, seeing the Eiffel Tower lit up and people coming out in solidarity, and the whole notion of the concert that, you know, people will rile up against come this, and that there are far more, you're far more likely to meet good people in your life than you are bad, and trying to hold on to that innocence of childhood, I suppose.
It's awful, though, when you think about it, really. Like, I mean, our childhood, we were thrown out the door at 10 o'clock in the morning, ran wild for the day, came in, had a bit of grub, out again, and you
And I think, Debbie, to be honest, we were protected because, you know, because we weren't being followed by this imagery, we weren't followed by that sense, and you could protect children from it.
Yeah.
I always recall, even a couple of summers ago, having children in the car during the kind of Elaine O'Hara, Graham McDwyer, and reaching for the dial every 5 minutes when there was discussions about all of the content of that, and my kids were really small at the time, and kind of thinking, I don't remember, like, you know, putting a cushion over your head when Dallas was on was kind of the extent of it.
I remember, though, I do have this image of, my dad used to watch the BBC News, and I do have this image always, and I think I was actually frightened about it, of the Ayatollah. This image of the Ayatollah for years, and it's always stuck in my head, and I think it was because, but it was also when he came on, like, I think he'd, you know, there was, he'd dark thing in his head or whatever, and I think there was all this sort of, it was always very serious when a picture of him came up, so I was scared of him.
And we all have watched childhood movies that follow us through, and, you know, I still watch The Wizard of Oz with a bit of a chill. But from the point of view, those things stay with us. But I think, of course, we need to inform children to a degree that they're not misinformed and overly scared by rumour. But I do think we have to protect their innocence and protect their vulnerabilities in whatever way we can. Mm. And any message around the truth of that situation has to encompass a bit of balance.
Can I just ask you something? You were just talking about bad people there, and just reminded me of something a couple of weeks ago. I was with somebody, the child wandered off and the parent said, don't wander off, there's loads of bad people around. Should you be saying that?
It wouldn't be my choice in terms of that. I mean, you always lean on things like, the man will throw you out of the restaurant if you don't sit down. But I prefer to not threaten, but I prefer to use lawmakers rather than lawbreakers to curtail my children's behaviour in that way. But I'm not so sure that's the most helpful suggestion. Okay. Are you teaching them to be cautious, or are you teaching them to be terrified? Yeah. I'd be afraid it might be the latter.
On a happier note, lots of children will be finishing up national school and preparing for going to big school. Going to secondary school. What would be your top tips if you had a little one finishing up now? I know the Venetia's boy is finishing up in sixth class this week, and then he's going to first year. So what's the, what would be your way of, you know, making them feel excited and all that kind of way?
I'm delighted you asked me this question, because I think it's really important. We concentrate so much on the first day of school in terms of baby infants, and this population always get missed. And for me, this leap is way bigger. And I, the reason it is because it's such a transition. So you're coming out of primary school and you're kind of sixth classers, seniors. You're kind of king of the hill. And you kind of, there's a bit of street cred goes with that. And you're going into a population where the adolescent trajectory is incredibly steep. So a 12-year-old and an 18-year-old is very different to a 52-year-old and a 58-year-old. The distinction is quite different. So they're going into this where there's guys who are 6 foot with beards and they're sharing the same space. And it can be incredibly overwhelming. The gap in terms of having one teacher who spoon-fed you for the last 12 months to having nine teachers in nine different classrooms, having to geographically find your way around, have to have the right books for the right thing. And in some respects, I would see a lot of young people struggle with that transition. Yeah. It's also much more sophisticated. So the conversations will jump from Pokemon to discos. And for some children who are not maybe prepped for that, or not even kind of aware of that, can find that leap overwhelming. But there's loads of tips over the summer that you'd be, I would be getting them way more involved in their own responsibility for their own stuff.
Okay, so and gym, by stuff do you mean like their gear, getting
their gear
stuff
bags,
ready,
you know, if they have sports, that they pack their own stuff, that they make sure they have a list, that they get that. If you're going on holidays, maybe getting them to plan a day and how they're going to get from A to B, and looking at bus routes and looking at how you get from, you know, using timetables, getting them to organise. Organisational is where the most kids fall down.
For a kid that isn't organised, how do you get them organised?
Practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Investment. I mean, there's routine and organisation is a struggle for most of us. But if you're 12 and you've got all these things in your head about football and sport and all those pressures, organisation becomes really, really difficult. So you really get them to lean on visuals, like the timetable, like following, green coloured pens or this, and trying to get them into the mode.
And the locker.
Routine is really about practice. And it is about doing it over and over and over again. And it's classic, conditioning them to be able to do it. But summer is a real opportunity to prep them for that because the leap is big.
And what about things like with their lunch, for example? There might be a day where, they're leaving earlier because they've got to travel to school. They might be in the local primary school, which takes 10 minutes to get to. So they might want to make a start. Should you be getting them to do that, like during the summer? Should you be getting them used to how to make a sandwich, for example?
Yes.
If they don't like to do it.
Yes.
Know?
I mean, again, the more equipped you are, the more able you are, the more ready you feel,
and the more comfortable. The fear of the unknown is diminished if you have, I can do this.
And that's what anxiety is. Anxiety is the fear of the unknown. So any knowns that you can try and establish is really good. Now, I wouldn't ruin their summer by walking them to the secondary school every day. And doing that, but I think from the point of view of prepping them for that change, and I think that's a challenge because lots of parents will do their homework with their children up to sixth class. They'll check it, they'll look over it, they'll make sure that everything's organised and the uniform's laid out and all that sort of stuff. When you step into the next realm, like in the school where the organisation is required, you're not going to be there to be at their locker to sort out what they need for the next thing. And it's better to start that prep. But I also think it's also entering into the technology side of things in a much greater way. There's a whole myriad of different kind of complexities to gender, sexuality, intimacy, all that stuff is starting to come down the line, and really they need as much kind of support around that as possible.
But pretty terrifying, isn't it?
It is.
And
not to scare everyone, but most kind of mental health problems will emerge in first and second year in terms of under that pressure and stress. Okay. And I would say to parents out there, just when first year is kind of managed, second year is also a really important year to watch out for. And the highest instance of bullying happened in second year of all years.
Really?
Because
why is that?
I think in first year, they're all kind of a bit lost and they're all feeling a bit. But when they get in second year, they kind of get a bit of swag and they can kind of re-stress that. Another tip I would say to any child, when you're making friendships, don't make a friendship of three, because it's really problematic. Because there's always a situation where you can take one of your friends on holidays and you have to pick one. If you go two, go four, go six.
Yeah.
But three is problematic.
Yeah.
Just because there's always a favorite.
But I think it's always, three is always problematic because there's always a... Do you know what I mean? Time that one will gang up with the other one against,
Yeah, and I think parents might worry about, will they know people going from their primary school to their secondary school and all that stuff. Those things are padding and they're helpful. But I've equally seen children who've gone in and had a whole new social slate and it's really, really helped them. And children who've gone with their pals and that's really helped them. So it's a bit of a lottery from that regard. But prep, support, open door policy and organisation.
If you'd like to ask Colman a question, just text us on 57102 for 20 cent. We'll be chatting about, what we do, state exams,
Dublin's Q102.
Yes, you're on the Drive at 5 with Debbie Allen and for Scott Williams. Venetia Quick and Colman Nochter, who's our child and adolescent psychotherapist and author of the book that everyone should have on their shelf, Cop On, What It Is Your Child Needs to Thrive and Survive in Today's World. Now, we've covered how to chat to your children, really the horrible atrocities that are happening in the world. The graduation from primary school to secondary school, and the state exams are starting tomorrow. And I know when you say it to people of our age, they go, it doesn't define you, it's grand,
Can't remember what I even did.
You know what I mean? Like, you get some, but to the kids, some kids out there, it is absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm always delighted when I get to this point of the year because I feel like I do the Leaving Cert every year.
The nightmares.
Because it really is, and it just peaks every year, the level of anxiety, the level of worry, both from parents and young people around how prepared they are for it. And there's so much bearing on this exam and these sets of exams that you're really trying to get a child or a young person to kind of see the context and perspective of it. And it unfortunately doesn't help to go, yeah. I don't even remember what I got.
I know.
To them, it's the biggest deal. And they're really, really invested in it. And they're putting a lot of work in it. And I really feel sorry for parents, because if you say, you know, just do the best you can, they're kind of saying, you're putting pressure on me. And if you say to them, we don't care what you get, well, you don't believe in me then. You know, so it's really, it is a lose-lose situation. It's really just about supporting them. And it's always our busiest time is May, around the mocks, and then May, June is...
Because the mocks were always harder, I remember. Or they marked just harder or whatever. I don't know what it was.
But I found if you do well in your mocks, then you sort of get really disappointed when you walk into the exam and it's really... You find it harder.
Yeah, and I mean the whole our whole kind of Leaving Cert trauma is because of the onus of what's riding on this 2-hour exam or sitting down and all the last 2 years' work. And you know, people will say, you know, it's a rote learning, it's a memory test, it's this, and of course there's strategies and ways in which you can score well in them. That's very little consolation to someone who's actually doing it.
What about the ones that freak out, like, you know, that have been doing well all year and then they go in and they actually, like, have it, like, freak out?
It's actually weird that not an awful lot of people freeze in the exam period. And you'd imagine it would be a lot more. The worst period is the last 7 days. That's where the panic starts to happen for people. It's because it's a real anticipation, anxiety. But I'd say to families out there who are really stressed and really finding it really difficult, once tomorrow is over, things will get easier. It's that there's something about that first exam that we're in it now and we'll just go through it.
Is it English tomorrow? Do you start with English?
English paper one and two.
Paper one.
But I would say to you, like, there's no point in having any discussions at the moment other than just relaxing people. Because, you know, if you're relaxed, if you're well rested and you're well hydrated, you're functioning 30% better than you would be if you weren't. So those are kind of, it's trying to get you in peak performance at this stage rather than cramming.
Yeah.
Cramming just creates more anxiety. And when you're anxious and stressed, your thoughts are not coherent. So you're going to read the wrong question or you're going to mix up a paper or whatever it might be. And so you're much, much better to take your time and breathe through it. And at the moment, it's just about getting parents to get their young people to sleep, getting them well rested, well fed, and nurture them through it. But I would say for a lot of kind of Leaving Cert students, it's kind of when you take up the exam piece, yes, that's one part of it, but they're also, again, a bit like the last group we were talking about, they're leaving an institution.
I cried the day I left school.
For 6 years, and whether you love or loathe that institution, it's still
a massive transition.
What's coming next is adulthood, responsibility, expectations, accountability, and you know, I think that's tied up in the exam. Some of it's channeled through the Leaving Cert exams, and
it'll get
channeled through the other stuff. But there's a lot to can be gained from having a conversation about that other stuff over the summer, and you know, reassuring somebody, you know, they might be about to live independently for the first time. They might have to wash their own clothes. They might have to manage their own budget. And yeah, of course, college is really exciting, but it's also quite petrifying from the point of view of the changes and
another big change. And then going to college, and then if you don't do the work, sure, it doesn't matter. You won't have somebody on your back all the time.
But one thing I would notice in the last years, I've really noticed, is that the limited options that people had. I just remember, I was only talking to someone today about it. Like, when I left school, you could do nursing, you could do carpentry, you could go to the bank. You know, college and third level was an option, but it wasn't the be all and end all. And it just seems that now there's very little options other than college, and everyone has to go to college, and everyone has to fit into the college remit.
System,
and you find people just picking courses for the sake of picking courses because, God forbid, you wouldn't know what you want to do at 17 for the rest of your life. And it seems that in a place where many of us are kind of cursed with the tyranny of choice, a lot of young people haven't got as many choices. I think the vocational options, the other options that, you know, probably were more available to us 20 years ago, are not available to young people. And so it's very kind of, rather than broadening our learning, we've kind of almost narrowed it in some respect.
What about taking a year out? Like, if you're in that situation where you're in school and it's a routine and you're in a safe environment, which you know, is taking a year out between school and college and travelling or going abroad today, is that really a good idea?
Taking the year out is the same as TY. To 50%, it's a brilliant idea, allows them to mature, lets them make decisions. For 50% percent, it's chaos. And the year out is similar because you become distracted, you get a part-time job, you get used to having a few bob in your pocket, the thoughts going back to school. So for people who can be tangentialized or kind of taken off on a tangent in some respects. Maybe that's not. They maybe need something more structured. But for someone who maybe can use the time out and reconnect easily, it's much better for them. So, yeah, these things, they're always a bit of a lottery. You don't know what's best. But if you're taking a year out, I certainly wouldn't make it a prolonged summer. I think you need to structure it with something.
With something,
putting something in there. And whether it's doing night courses or doing something more practically based. But I mean, the classic debate at this point is over the follow your dreams or the permanent and pensionable.
I know.
You'll always have the child who wants to do something really creative and wants to do, I don't know, arts and Cork or something. And their parents are going, there's no money in that. You won't get a job
get
in that.
Piece
you have
of paper
to do this.
First.
Yeah. And there's that debate about whether you should go with the sensible, your heart or your head. Almost option. At 17 or 18, and I know there's a cost involved, and that's probably a realistic option, but I would tend to follow your heart piece. I mean, I think if you can do a degree in something that's really interesting rather than doing
it, you won't work it down your life, then, you know,
And it, maybe you won't end up doing what you did in the first instance, and maybe 80% of us don't end up doing what we did in our undergraduate.
I still don't know what I want to do.
but it's something that will invest in you. And obviously, college is far more a life educator than it is an academic educator,
and so
they need to kind of see that. But for the moment, just reassure them, tell them it's going to be okay, and whatever happens, we've got this.
Yeah, you have got this. Well, it's fascinating chatting to you, and the time always catches up on us as well. Colman Nocter, child and adolescent psychotherapist, thank you so much for taking the time to pop into us.
The best of Drive at 5. Phone and text lines are now closed. Dublin's Q102.